into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is Boeing machinists on strike. Our guest is George Johnson, a Boeing worker and a member of the Society of Professional Engineering Employees in Aerospace, SPEA, the second largest union at Boeing, with 18 to 19,000 members. Thanks for joining us.
Great to be here. Great to chat with you.
Let's start with the news. The International Association of Machinists, the largest union at Boeing, has been on strike since Friday, September 13th. At the time of this interview, 32,000 Boeing workers had been on strike for 11 days. 2 weeks ago, a tentative agreement between the company and the union was reached. Business agents, the company, politicians, and the local media all celebrated this agreement as historic. What happened next?
So, I mean, basically they voted it down. So 95% to vote it down, 96% to go on strike. And this was after, in July, the machinists filled up T-Mobile Park with some like 25,000 members, you know, where the Mariners play, and voted 99.9% to initially authorize a strike. So, I mean, you know, they were serious.
So how did the machinists build this level of solidarity? I mean, given that they were being told by everyone above that, you know, business agents, company, politicians, that this was the greatest thing. How did they build up this level of solidarity to vote down the tentative agreement and go on strike?
Yeah, so one thing to keep in mind is that you have a lot of people kind of working closely together in big factories. So Everett, like the Everett factory, is the biggest factory in the world. You got 777s made there, 767s.
You're talking about airplanes now.
Yeah, talking about airplanes. Yeah, some 777X aircraft. Formerly the 787 before they moved that to South Carolina to get around the union. Renton is also where they have the MAX line, the 737 MAX. A lot of people there too. So you have a lot of people in one space, first of all, communicating, building solidarity. And Boeing is also kind of an old-timey company. So you have like softball leagues, you know, various sports leagues, ham radio clubs, things like that. So people bond that way too. I know the Machinist Union was having like, you know, last year, year and a half ago, was having like, you know, barbecues where members would get together, talk about what they wanted in the contract. They were doing polling, that kind of thing. Maybe the more interesting thing for us, you know, class struggle, is they were doing like straight like marches through the factory. So they would get up to like, you know, 1,000 people in the Everett factory, all just like marching together, walking through the whole factory, just like banging on stuff, blowing whistles, making as much noise as possible. Like they're all wearing earplugs pretty much. It was crazy. And I don't know. And that kind of showed management too, that they weren't afraid. I heard they did that once in the new, like right in the new CEO's face. He was at the plant that day and they did the march.
This was after the tentative agreement.
No, this was yes, this was after the tentative agreement. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. I mean, they were doing it before then too, but then it just like ramped up and snowballed even after the TA because people were pissed. One other thing I was going to say is that I've heard from like old timers on the picket line that they really made a point of getting younger members on board. Like I talked to one lady on the picket line who just said, I made a point of talking to every new member on the shop floor, like not to accept a crappy deal. Like this is your future. You want a career here, not just a job, like that sort of thing. So I think that was important too.
Tell us why this tentative agreement wasn't historic, like so many people said it was.
Sure, yeah. I think there's like a lot of context here. So the machinists went on strike in 2008 and got, I mean, I don't know, I don't know the full history, but like maybe a little more of a favorable contract, like given the conditions back then, economic crash, all that. But I mean, over the subsequent years, like Boeing kind of like tried to put the screws on the machinist union and like force them into extensions. And they would do things like, hang the future of the next, aircraft over their heads. Like, if you don't accept this contract, we'll ship out the jobs, we'll build the next airplane somewhere else. They get politicians on board, the media on board, like lobbying for things like that, because there's a big economic impact from, Boeing being here. It sucks. And so basically, I mean, we could go into this more later, but the machinists were kind of forced into this 10-year extension where they only got like 1% raises a year, I think, or even every 2 years. You had a lot of inflation since then. The starting wage, even right now, is only like 19 bucks an hour. And so these like new minimum wage laws that have passed, like would actually give some starting machinists a raise, for example, like the 1940 minimum wage in Renton that recently just passed. And these are people that are putting together airplanes, so a lot of people, have multiple jobs. Their wages have not kept up with inflation. And we could talk a little bit about this, but like the basic, the basic story a lot of machinists will tell is they basically had their pension stolen from them by Boeing and also their leadership at the time as well.
What, can you explain how how the pension was stolen?
Yeah, so I think yeah, you could. I think there's a good Labor Notes article on this too. Like I wasn't around then, but I think the basic series of events is they initially voted down. They voted down a contract TA initially, right? They voted it down, and then what Boeing did was they sweetened the pot, had a 15,000 signing bonus, right? But they took away the pension. So, a lot of new members, they see the 15,000 signing bonus. They think, oh, this is great. And perhaps, it's tough, but there was a lot of stuff in the media that was like, oh, economic times are tough. Like you got to take this offer, $15,000 signing bonus. Whoa, this is crazy. But then they also lose the defined benefit pension, right? Which can be a lot, like, quickly, you 5, 10 years, if you stay at the company 5 or 10 years, that quickly, very quickly, the pension would outpace that. Like, it could turn into hundreds of thousands of dollars for retirement. But like, the more the more villainous aspect of this is just that they held the second vote after the first contract was voted down. They held it over the holidays when a lot of machinists, are on vacation already. Boeing has a yearly, like, week-long vacation on Christmas. We get off no matter what. So a lot of people save all their vacation time and either just take the whole month off if they can, or like pad on an extra week to that. So the contract vote was during those December holidays. So not everybody voted. Some people were off in like the Philippines. They're off, at home. They couldn't vote. And so the contract passes with, I think, 51% lower turnout than it should have been. All these politicians lobbying for them to do it. It's just terrible. And I think a lot of people are right to think that their pension was stolen from them.
Such a shame. So, George, you are not a machinist. You are a member of SPEEA, which represents engineers in the Puget Sound area and elsewhere, including Portland. And SPEEA has signaled strong support for IAM. Boeing management attempted to get SPEEA members to scab, to do the machinist work, and is threatening to lay you off. So can you help us understand your union's interest in all of this and how SPEEA is responding to management's moves?
Sure, I know I heard in Auburn there's some like memo circulated where a manager was trying to get a list of SPEEA members that were willing to do like IAM work and get paid. One thing I would point out is that like SPEEA members, we don't normally get I mean, for one, for salaried employees, we do get overtime pay, but it's overtime plus $6. So we like to call it taco time. You get, your time plus you can buy a taco. But I believe Boeing management was offering SPEEA members to scab like time and a half and even double time. So they're trying to, get people with buku bucks. Some SPEEA members are like former machinists. Most of us probably aren't certified to do that type of work, but maybe they were trying to pick off some of the people who did. I'm not totally sure. But luckily, I mean, I think our union has had mostly pretty good communications on it. If you go to the website, we've been encouraged not to do IAM work. If you get asked to do it, say no. Say you don't have the certifications. If you get asked to do it again, comply, but talk to your council rep, which is a shop steward. I mean, I think it's mostly pretty fine. I think it's one aspect I think the stewards and area reps have been kind of filling in is just that the explanation is fairly legalistic, so you also have to give people the why of why you shouldn't scab. Like, if you scab on the machinist, they get a worse contract. That'll hurt us during negotiations. Usually, SPEEA contracts go as the machinists do, so they get a better contract. We'll probably want to get some of what they're getting, and so you're only hurting us if you scab on them for like some money in the short term. So we're trying to communicate the why too.
So, unionized aerospace workers have a tremendous amount of power, as commercial aircraft is one of the biggest ticket items that we manufacture in the United States and sell to other countries. So, stopping production of commercial aircraft costs Boeing over $110 million a day, but the economic impact is much deeper than that. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, so one word, in one word, it would be suppliers. So, I mean, if you think of it like Boeing back in the day was kind of, I mean, Boeing always had a lot of suppliers. It's just people who make parts, for the airplane, people who do stuff for Boeing. So there's a whole economy around Boeing. So in Everett, in Renton, even near the Boeing buildings, you'll see these various suppliers like Crane, Rockwell Collins, Honeywell. You'll see names of companies like that. So it's not just Boeing that's losing money right now. There's this whole network of almost, I want to say parasitic, but maybe it's maybe mutually beneficial, whatever you want to call it. I think there's a Boeing supplier in almost every state in the United States. There's Boeing suppliers in other countries. So, yeah, and this strike can potentially affect all of them. There'll be less work for the suppliers to do. They could have people twiddling their thumbs, like that kind of thing.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is Labor Radio. You're listening to George Johnson, a Boeing worker, in the 11th day of the strike of 32,000 Boeing machinists. If you appreciate this information, you like Labor Radio, donate to KBOO, community-supported, listener-sponsored, non-corporate radio. Go to kboo.fm and click on the donate button.
Why is this strike important to the public, like regular people who take trips on airplanes?
Well, I mean, I think you don't want to die, right? I mean, you want to be safe. Yeah, I think that in a nutshell. So, yeah, like since the merger with McDonnell Douglas in late 90s, Boeing has like outsourced more and more things to suppliers. It's focused more on profits, less on engineering. I mean, I don't know, we could all give our conjecture, but I mean, I think the results speak for themselves.
You want to explain some of the results that people may
Yeah,
be familiar with?
I mean, since the Max crashes, in 4 or 5 years ago, and then the door plug incident, the company management has definitely prioritized, like profits over safety. So one area of the strike that I think is really important is the machinist demand for a seat on the board at Boeing. In Europe, at companies, Airbus, union, from what I know, the unions have a seat on the board. They're in a pretty strong position against stuff like this. So I think it's a positive step if the unions at Boeing have a seat on the Boeing board. It's impossible. Like, you can throw out the CEO of Boeing, but you still have the same board elected by the shareholders. So that's also part of the mess we're in, right? I mean, eventually we want like worker control of these companies. We want these companies to be publicly owned, but I think that aspect, union seat on the board, is a step in the right direction.
I've been talking with workers on the line here in Portland, and one of the things they say is that we lost a bunch of people to retirement during COVID, and 65 or something percent of the workforce now has only 3 years in. And so you have folks that aren't familiar with the work, and they even have folks that are inspectors who aren't as familiar with the work as they should be. And then the company is insisting 42 planes a year, 42 planes a year, 42 planes a year. The folks are understaffed or inexperienced, and quality is not there.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and I don't know the exact statistic, but I think I've heard in SPIA now, they did a lot of voluntary, or Boeing did a lot of voluntary layoffs during COVID, and a lot of people just took it, and so a lot of knowledge got lost there for sure. And I think I've heard around like 30 to 40% of our engineering workforce has been hired in the last few years. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of brain drain, which is, yeah, which is not good. We need people also to, a lot of young members also like don't stick around, because they can make more elsewhere. We don't have a pension anymore, unfortunately. And so yeah, what's the selling point for people to stay?
In Portland, we've been alerted to the role of Boeing in manufacturing weapons being used by Israel in its genocide of Palestinians. Bombs, fighter jets, and attack helicopters are produced by Boeing using our tax dollars. The pro-Palestine student protests at Portland State University this past spring focused on severing the school's ties to Boeing. How has Boeing's role in Israel's genocide impacted the strike or community solidarity with the workers?
I guess first of all, I think the support of people in solidarity with Palestine. I mean, I think people are on board with the machinists. I think people are generally pretty smart. I was more worried about that like 5 or 6 months ago. But I mean, one thing I'd say is like these workers actually have the power to stop production of weapons. I mean, I would argue during this strike, you might have seen the CEO of Boeing Defense just got fired. Right now, all the non-union employees at Boeing, including workers in the defense org, are on furlough, like 1 week less a month. So you could argue that they're slowing the productions of weapons right now. One other thing I think it's important to point out too is that the vast majority of the Puget Sound is just Boeing commercial aircraft. Most of like 90 something percent of these workers are not building weapons. I think some 767s do get turned into like KC-46 like military tankers for refueling, but yeah, not a ton of defense in the sand. But even if there were, I mean, these workers have a lot of power. You want them on your side, right? You want the people on your side with the power to stop producing weapons. And I would also keep in mind that defense, like the defense industry, is kind of, it's partly a jobs program, right? Like if you go to what's the aerospace museum called in Dayton, where they have all the military equipment and stuff. If you've ever gone there, like you'll see like planes that they flew once, or like a drone they flew once and then scrapped, or a satellite that went at one time and never got used again. Like a lot of times, companies like Boeing, although they're not like directly funded by the public, like maybe a company like Airbus, they're subsidized on the back end through like favorable military contracts. But without as much of the accountability to the government. So really, is the public, we want like manufacturing jobs in the US, but we should want this company to be publicly owned and accountable to us. And we don't want to do the back end, weapons subsidies anymore, right? I think that's the horizon. Like we want to manufacture things in the US, but we want to democratically choose. We don't want to choose all these weapons of war. And I should probably say, if I haven't said these words yet, the words public ownership here as well.
Well, that actually was my next question. In Portland and Seattle, The DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, have been mobilizing members to engage with this strike. So why is this fight important for socialists? You mentioned public ownership. What else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just directly class struggle. I mean, you have a bunch of, you know, executives, fat cats, lawyers that have just like ruined a company which used to make really good airplanes. And I think a lot of people can see where the lines are drawn. And this is the biggest strike in the country. Like, socialists should just be a part of it, period. The other thing I'd say is just like, you know, this is a big manufacturer in the U.S. that kind of partially props up our trade deficits after a lot of factory jobs have been outsourced. Like, we want more blue collar folks in the DSA that are, you know, socialists, right? And this is a good opportunity to meet people where they're at, talk to people, and you know, show them some solidarity. And maybe later down the line, they'll be more open to what we're doing because we showed up for them. I liked, if you guys have ever seen the movie Pride, where you know, the whole plot for that was sort of like they had gays and lesbians support the coal miners. You know, your struggle is my struggle, and building mutual support there. I think that's sort of a good model for struggles like this too.
I'll just point out, as someone who's a little bit older than the rest of you, that back in the days of the Vietnam War, William Wimpfesinger, who was the national mm-hmm. president of the Machinist Union and a member of DSA, was advocating for what they called a peaceful transition, or what we now call a just transition to peaceful manufacturing. He wasn't able to accomplish that, but I think it's pretty important that's a tradition, even within the Machinist Union.
Yeah, definitely. I think sometimes, like, the left and, you know, Puget Sound, various areas can, like, stereotype the machinists as sort of like a reactionary union or whatever, or just write them off. And I think it's not a good thing to do. People of all sorts of, you know, politics in the machinists. And I think if we show them solidarity, we can win them over to our cause. And if we don't want to try and do that, like, what are we doing?
George, how else can our listeners support the strike, and how can they keep informed?
I mean, I would say the main thing is just show up to the picket lines. I know in Portland you have a plant in Gresham. Maybe one of you guys could give the various addresses, but you should definitely show up wherever there's a gate, wherever there's a picket line. I think the Portland DSA is having solidarity events, right? So you can go to the Portland DSA website and check their calendar, I'm sure. I would say that's the number one thing. They also have a strike fund, which you could donate to well, but I think just people showing support on the picket line is the main thing. I know they need help at a lot of these gates. It's been a long time since they've been on strike, so it can be hard to keep all these gates at Boeing manned.
The locations for pickets in Portland are the parts plant at 19,000 Northeast Sandy Boulevard and the paint hangar at 4635 Northeast Cornfoot Road. The picket lines are ongoing 24/7, and you can check out Portland DSA solidarity visits to the picket line at portlanddsa.org.
And that wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We've been talking with George Johnson, member of the Society of Professional Engineers and Extraordinary Employees in Aerospace at Boeing. Thank you, George, for being with us. I'm Jamie Partridge here with my co-host, Laura Wadlin. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
We invite you to participate in our brand new public affairs program, Once Upon a Time. Share with us your memories and